information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Appear to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
This is a drill, and these are blanks. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 191 from Media Monarchy. It's October 22nd, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, unrest, protests, and far-fetched France, selective service elections and concerns. Don't ask, don't tell, and inspired informants. October surprise, mountain party, and Osama opinions, pat down drills, and looking back blanks. All that and so very much more. October 22nd, 2010, episode 191 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Separate my past from a rhyme, 'cause how could you separate milk from lime? Waste my time.
Looking back. Feels like your mind always somewhere else.
Looking Back. That's Keane and Kinane with a track from Keane's new Night Train EP. Running up the stairs like Rocky, ladies and gentlemen, it's the 191st episode of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. It's October 22nd, 2010, and we are coming to you live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, blasting out worldwide. Again, thanks to praradio.org, and of course, thanks to zeropointradio.com. Simulcast live as well. Hello to Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM. And on the East Coast, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. Simulcast, 1 p.m. East Coast time, live. And thanks to Free Radio Olympia, 98.5 FM, Berkeley Liberation Radio.net, 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, OneSkyRadio.com, 90.7 FM in Kisilov, Alaska, 89.9 Patriot Radio in La Mesa, Texas, Radio23.org, gets you the high-quality episodes. I put up 56K and also 192, the higher quality, suitable for rebroadcast. If you have an alternative media outlet, radio show, website, video, anything, you don't have to ask. Just play the high quality one so it sounds good. You can get in touch with me, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Ustream, Blip, Cafe Press, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and archive.org. All of those, Media Monarchy as your username. We also want to say thanks again to John in Maryland for donating to MediaMonarchy.com. The PayPal button's on the top right. Anything you can give is greatly appreciated to help pay for the domain names and the studio rent and all those other little pesky things like Skype credit that, again, help keep independent alternative media going and commercial-free. This is the most jam-packed two-hour podcast you are likely to find anywhere, and if you find it that way, and again, thank you to longtime listeners who constantly get in touch, send news tips, make contact, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. You can even mail some media to the Monarchy, P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon, 97212. And yes, of course, the Obamasiah was just here a few short days ago. With all the platitudes, and we're nonpartisan here, we're trying to give you the raw info as puzzle pieces, as we're all putting together our own puzzles and whatever metaphors you like, getting outside of boxes, on and on. I think you know what I mean, and I think that's why you're here, and I think that's why you tune into alternative media. Breaking news, October 22nd, 2010. The NPR and Juan Williams firing story. Yes, the latest firing of a media personality over the culture wars. Of course, we had Rick Sanchez just a few weeks ago, Helen Thomas a few months before that. We'll get into that story a little bit later. Britain's newest nuclear submarine has run aground during drills, looking like the Loch Ness Monster off the coast of Scotland. China against current account limits, says a G20 source. All that and so much more swirling around the world and breaking live. I give as much as I can and go pretty much up until we go live, adding the latest info I can to the websites that, again, try and lay out a path for you. And there's all those things that come to me throughout the week that I want to try and add in as information to the site, such as, just because I link to things doesn't mean I necessarily endorse it. I'm trying to give a broad view and give that to you So I link to truther sites and lefty and right sites and all around the world. And again, I thank you. Thank everybody out there. As again, we reference as the show gets bigger, and I hope better, there are more plates to spin as we're streaming live video now, and we've been doing it for 6+ months, putting these clips up to YouTube again as a way to get the episode out. This all started essentially as a little blog. Then it turned into a radio show, then an expanded video, podcast, multiple websites, interviews, mixtapes, all those things. But what I meant to say is I should check my notes if I mention everything I wanted to mention. I did get, thanks to Sarah, it was awesome. A friend at work hooked me up with an old iPhone. Gratis. So, thanks to another friend, it's now jailbroken and is essentially a Wi-Fi pod, as I call it. So, I'm not up to the satellite grid, but if I can catch Wi-Fi, I can do all kinds of other things. So, you may have noticed my Twitter feed ramp up alarmingly in the last week, and you're going to see that. And again, all of these other avenues, retweeting, making connections, doing interviews, hooking up with folks all around the world, people I've never met, people I probably will never meet. But hopefully this all resonates, and this is why we all need to get together. This is the kind of community that I think folks are trying to work on at tragedyandhope.com. So, twitter.com/MediaMonarchy is exploding, so you should hop on that explosion. I also want to thank my man Alan in Omaha, who has been a help for a while in a number of ways to Media Monarchy, is now helping me post to cyberspacewar.com, so you may notice more things coming out of that website covering the attacks on inner space and outer space. I'll throw the call out again. And I know I've done it before. If I drop the ball, I apologize. It's plate spinning. If we can get somebody posting to foodworldorder.com, mediamonarchy@gmail.com, we can work all this stuff out. But I'm throwing out that call again, and it's tough to respond to everybody over every little thing. So don't get mad and don't get frustrated, because everybody's spinning plates. More and more plates. More and more plates with less food on them, I suppose. I also want to mention we're in the chat room on ZeroPointRadio.com. Building more and more connections that, caveat, are all based on the virtual world, which as we're tracking on CyberspaceWar.com, the military and all their surrounding connections clamoring for an I-9/11 to shove an I-Patriot Act down our throats, down our series of tubes. So these have to be real world. We're going to start this episode 191 off officially now by getting into the question we cover on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Will Americans follow French example of mass civil unrest, or will the sleeping middle classes continue to scratch their butts and watch Dancing with the Stars? How will Americans react when the government begins to impose the same austerity measures that are causing riots, street battles, fuel blockades, and other assorted chaos in France? Will we witness mass civil unrest, or will the sleeping middle classes continue to scratch their butts and watch Dancing with the Stars? Now, I read through this article in its entirety on NewWorldNextWeek.com. There's a lot of URLs to stumble over. fortunately, it's all linked up. So I won't read that full article again because I can just link you over to the latest New World Next Week episode. And we will get a couple of clips to flesh this story out of what has been going on in France and what that could mean around the world and where I sit here in the Pacific Northwest. Well, I said I didn't want to read the article, but I at least need to give you the background. As predicted, with these austerity measures, France is now a week plus into strikes and protests in response to government plans to raise the retirement age from 60 to 62. Now, of course, this brought out the usual cast of violent anarchists. Two different kinds of protests going on. There's the anarchists who can't wait to smash shit up, which only serves to bring the crackdown from the police state. It's exactly what they want. Works out perfectly. And we can see some of the updates posted from the bottom, and we're grabbing this from Paul Joseph Watson. Violent anarchists help French authorities crush pension protests. Because that's the catch here. The black-clad youths were more worried about getting shut off from the dole, smashing shit up with baseball bats to Starbucks, and we've seen it around the world. Sometimes they are provocateur and connect back to black ops and military intelligence. The legitimate protests and the ones that genuinely hurt the establishment and put the idiot anarchists to shame were being run by French workers, truck drivers, and union leaders and enjoyed 70% support from the population. But the violent anarchists in France who spent the last week plus pointlessly smashing shop windows and setting fire to cars have, quote, shot the protest movement in the foot by demonizing legitimate union demonstrators and allowing the government to crack down with paramilitary forces, this according to a French labor expert. We're putting together three articles from Paul Joseph Watson. The first was the question, will Americans follow French example of mass civil unrest? The second being, violent anarchists help French authorities crush pension protests. But tie into this, the third piece, quoting from Time Magazine article, asking, well, it's not asking, but it's saying that the prospect of civil war in the U.S., quote-unquote, doesn't seem that far-fetched. With protesters in France, this is Paul Joseph Watson, not Time Magazine, we'll quote that. With protesters in France entering a seventh, now being ninth, as I speak to you here on the 22nd, day of strikes and demonstrations against draconian austerity measures, many political observers in the U.S. are now wondering how long it will be before similar scenes unfold on American streets, even with Time Magazine now conceding that the prospect of a civil war in the States doesn't seem that far-fetched. To be clear, Stephen Gandel's article entitled, Will the Federal Reserve Cause a Civil War? There's the question. Largely dismisses the possibility that the Fed's upcoming November 3rd meeting, right around our next selections here, during which Bernanke is expected to announce a fresh round of money printing, will that prompt a national uproar, but it doesn't exactly debunk the notion of longer-term social dislocation as a backlash to the crumbling economy, as many are now forecasting. The question remains, how will Americans react if the Obama administration pushes ahead with its plan to seize all private 401k pensions, which will be swallowed up by Social Security under the banner of mandatory guaranteed retirement accounts? The Time Magazine question, will the Federal Reserve cause a civil war? The Skull and Bone CIA-connected Time Magazine noting that it doesn't seem that far-fetched.
We heard just a short while ago that, in fact, it's not so much fuel supply as fuel distribution that is the problem. There is a sufficient quantity of oil and gasoline and other products for automobilists that are in the terminals and in the depots across the country. But the problem is getting it from those terminals to the service stations. And in many cases, they're being blocked by truckers who are on strike who have joined this protest against the reform bill. Here's what a couple of the motorists that we talked to earlier in the day had to say about the situation.
And I really need to feed my car, and I can't because everybody is going to the fuel station.
It's very difficult to find a station with gasoline. I made perhaps 10 stations before finding one station with gasoline.
I think it's completely logical to strike. Everyone has the right to do it. But when it means blocking a whole population of workers, it's not great.
And I think that what that woman there at the end expressed is the kind of thing that the government is gambling on, that sooner or later the French general public will come to terms with the strike and say, well, no, it's not the government that at the problem, isn't causing the problem here, but rather the unions. It hasn't happened yet, though, because in fact right now, according to the latest public opinion polls, people would like to see the government renegotiate that pension reform bill. Max?
It's a country, of course, built on revolution, Jim. How likely is it that the government will respond to this if it continues to get worse and there's gridlock across the country?
That's really the question, Max, is how bad is it going to get, and how many other unions will join, to what extent the students will be out there. We've seen these situations in the past here where there have been face-offs and large social movements that have seized the country. 1995 is one that comes to mind, and the government was forced to back down because there was so much social unrest. Whether it will get to that point, the government's obviously gambling that it's not going to get to that point. Also, they're trying to get this pension reform bill through the upper house to the parliament, to the Senate, by Wednesday, hoping that that will take some of the steam out of this social action that we've been seeing. And that's not entirely clear either. Even after it's been passed, perhaps, there may still be some disputes in the streets. So we'll have to just see how this plays out. Tomorrow's a big strike day here. A number of other strikers will be joining those strikers that are already on. There'll be demonstrations across the country. And then Wednesday's the vote. So we'll be watching this very closely over the next 2 days, and the government will be too.
Some of them are decked out with shields and helmets. Others are in plain clothes. The French state is mobilizing all the forces of crowd control at its disposal as clashes between police and anti-government protesters turn ever more violent. In Paris, young anti-capitalist protesters attack banks, smashing windows and hurling flares in a show of anger against reforms to the country's pension system. Police arrested around 30 people after these clashes. President Nicolas Sarkozy's plans to raise the age of retirement from 60 to 62 has provoked outrage from the country's powerful unions too. They're planning a more peaceful but potentially more damaging protest, a campaign of strikes by truckers, rail workers and others that's threatening to plunge French industry into chaos next week.
And again, the question surrounding all of this is if and when this is coming to our North American union. So I just went to Google News and tried to grab the latest. Seems late last night from the Washington Post, France in turmoil as a nationwide strike over pension reform stretches on. And there we have it. Now, something I didn't mention on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com episode, there's not enough time. We got to try and keep it somewhat concise. That, of course, the Obamasiah was in town, returning to Portland, Oregon, where he had his largest campaign rally, 60 plus 70,000 people on the waterfront in 2008. He was in town Wednesday pretty much as we were shooting New World Next Week. And my girlfriend runs AV. She was at that event. So she was in the belly of the beast there as the clamoring masses shower hosannas on our selected leader. So we're going to run down all the related and otherwise related Obamasiah and war whore updates we're calling selective service. In Oregon, Obama stumps for Kitzhaber for governor. Again from the Washington Post, Obama stumps in Oregon, kicking off 4-day swing through blue states. Obama implored Democrats in Portland on Wednesday evening to defy the conventional wisdom in the midterm elections. Less than 2 weeks away, kicking off a furious last-ditch campaign swing through Western battleground states. You're going to be fired up, Obama told a raucous crowd at a rally for his party's gubernatorial candidate, John Kitzhaber. Because in less than two weeks, you can set the direction of this, blah, 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 blah. Again, running around, shilling for anyone who has a D after their name, as we see, just as people start to break out of the left-right paradigm and the partisan bullshit dog and pony show, they're pulled back in, and as we wonder with the situation in France, wonder why we don't see things exactly like that here in the States. Could it be geographic? We're too spread out to all get to D.C. Unless corporate media, talking head, news comedians on the phony left and the phony right tell you to, then we'll do it. It's going to have to punch people in the Facebook, as we say. So you can read more about Obama's West Coast tour. I guess that's all I have to say about it. Something funny, though. Speaking of tours, Obama's upcoming trip to India. Obama to skip Sikh temple in India, partly out of head covering concern. That damn head covering concern. Basically, there's some temple, and if he goes in, he would have to wear a turban, and then you can't have Obama wearing a turban because too many people think he's a Muslim. I mean, wherever they get that idea, it only says it on his paperwork as Barry Satoru, but not to fall into all of those divisive traps, the birther memes, but they are there. Oh, Condi. You remember Condi Rice? Was it Chevron that named a tanker after her? She was like, don't do that. A talented musician and a Bush crony war criminal. She made a recent visit with Obama and pretty much defended the phony left side. Because again, they're all connected. All these agendas, all these regimes, all of these political dynasties are connected literally to their bloodlines, as we go over after every week saying, oh, Obama's related to Palin, surprise. Oh, Cheney's related to Obama, oh, surprise. But you can get more on Condi from Cryptogon.com. Washington Post has a piece on Obama the snob. Again, we won't get into that. What we will get into from allgov.com, Americans fleeing both Democratic and Republican parties. November election may be shaping up to be a big winner for Republicans, whether it's in Congress or at the gubernatorial level, but the long-term picture continues to appear grim for both major political parties. Allegiance has been slipping in terms of party registration for more than three decades, and the most recent numbers show Americans by the hundreds of thousands ditching their Republican or Democrat affiliation. Since November 08, Democrats have lost 927,000+, Republicans 587,+. As percentages go, Democrats lost 2.1%, Republican 1.9% over those last 2 years. Abandoning both parties, but not nearly damn fast enough. it could happen with the velocity to make most of these Congress critters head spin. Well, they're on a junket to God knows where. But did you hear about the Tea Party Express Senate candidate? Alaska's Joe Miller, described by the corporate media as the insurgent candidate and a Tea Party favorite, he was approved by the titular head of the trademark Tea Party, Sarah Palin, and received support for his Senate race from the Tea Party Express PAC, a neocon rhino Republican in name only organization masquerading as patriots. On Sunday, it was reported that the editor of an online Alaska news site was roughed up and handcuffed at an event after he attempted to ask Miller a question. Tony Hopfinger, editor of the online Alaska Dispatch, told KTUU-TV that security pushed him as he tried to question Miller. And this is what we're getting to. This is what it's coming to. All coming to a boil, again, pretty much based on all of these fake, phony boxes and dialectics that have been set up for us. It is pretty much a scientific dictatorship. They pretty much know which button to pull and which string to tug. And off we go. Jesse Ventura noting on rawstory.com that the Tea Party is orchestrated out of the Republican Party, of course noting the Koch brothers. Carl Denninger, a quote-unquote Tea Party founder, again from Raw Story, noting that Palin and Gingrich are jokes. The whole thing. Let's further break it down from Kurt Nimmo. Establishment Republicans poised to take control of House from establishment Democrats. Desperate to turn the tide against... turn the tide rising against Obama and the Democrats, Ryan Rudeminer, a DCCC spokesman, told Politico the ranks of resurgent Republicans include candidates with ties to organized crime, a Nazi enthusiast, and one being sued for attempted rape and sexual assault. So for all the Republicans popping the champagne and the countless millions spent in secret funds from shady right-wing groups, they haven't been able to close the deal in their targeted races, and that's why Democrats will win, Rudeminer confidently boasted. I don't even want to get into this, but it's basically Clintonites calling out the Koch brothers, John Birch Society. Meanwhile, they're all connected back to Council on Foreign Relations. Clinton, Carol Quigley, Palin, Bush Sr., Kissinger, Trilaterals, Bilderbergers, Clinton with about 100 Council on Foreign Relations members in his cabinet alone. And it seems every week we have another note of some corporate crony getting an administration job. President Obama's nominee for Deputy Secretary of State has earned more than $8 million in salary and bonus since January 2009 as an executive at a Wall Street bank that received a federal bailout. Thomas R. Nides, N-I-D-E-S, six-figure fundraiser for Hillary during her 2008 presidential run, disclosed his compensation from Morgan Stanley in a recent filing with the U.S. Office of Government Ethics. So, Morgan Stanley, Hillary-connected bankster, Wall Street mogul, Thomas Nides, picked for Deputy Secretary of State. Oh, deputy to Hillary Clinton. I worked on her campaign. It all makes sense. There's no conflict of interest here. And as we approach these class warfare, racially charged, culturally divisive dog and pony show selections coming up in just a few short weeks now. And coming up, we'll get into some of the interesting developments coming out of the Senate race from my home state of West Virginia. But there are debates, and we'll get into that later, and that's what we've got right now. (Laughs) a long-shot candidate for New York governor is grabbing headlines after he stole the show in the campaign's only debate. Jimmy McMillan represents the Rent is Too Damn High party. He caught viewers' attention at Monday's televised debate with his black gloves, mutton chops, and anti-rent mantra familiar to many New York apartment dwellers. Since then, clips of McMillan's appearance have made him a staple on national cable news shows. He's appeared on The Wendy Williams Show, Don Imus, on and on. McMillan's not a perfect messenger for his calls. He has blamed high rents in part on Jewish landlords. He's also given conflicting stories on how much rent he pays for his apartment in Brooklyn. Now, you didn't think I'd let a story like this go by, because if any time you've got viral videos and news and music and memes all tied together, you know that's tailor-made for media monarchy. So here are two different of the growing amount of versions of Jimmy McMillan, New York governor-to-be. Alas, it won't be. Jimmy McMillan, the rent is too damn high.
I represent the rent is too damn high party. People working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week for some a third job. Gotta listen like me. Women can't afford to take care of their children, feed their children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Gotta listen like me. It's not gonna happen. The rent too damn high movement. The people I'm here to represent can't afford to pay their rent. I represent the rent is too damn high party. Let's talk about the issue.
People can't afford to pay their rent. 30 seconds for you, sir.
Tell me, Jimmy, the rent is too damn high. They can't eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Listen, someone's stomach, your child's stomach just growled. Did you hear it? Did you hear it? They can't eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Listen, people working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week for some a third job. Gotta listen like me. Women can't afford to take care of their children, feed their children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. As a karate expert, I will not talk about anyone up here. I represent the rent is too damn high party. Once again, why? The rent is too damn high. You said the rent is too damn high.
Thank you, Mr. McMillan.
The rent is too damn high.
Rent is too damn high.
Rent too damn high is my thing. Jimmy McMillan is my name. Vote for the rent too damn high party at Jimmy McMillan November 2nd. Rent too damn high is my thing. Jimmy McMillan is my name. Vote for Jimmy McMillan at the rent too damn high party November 2nd.
Y'all better tell about me.
Rent is too damn high. Ain't nothing to talk about. Ain't nothing else to talk about.
Too damn.
Y'all
better tell about me.
It's too damn. Ain't nothing to talk about. Ain't nothing else to talk about.
Y'all better tell about me.
It's too damn. Ain't nothing to talk about. Ain't nothing else to talk about.
Y'all better tell about me.
It's too damn. Ain't nothing to talk about. Ain't nothing else to talk about.
Rent.
Ain't nothing to talk about.
Too
ain't nothing
damn
else to talk about. Ain't nothing to talk about. Ain't nothing else to talk about.
Rent.
Ain't nothing to talk about.
Too
ain't nothing
damn
else to talk about. Ain't nothing to talk about. Ain't nothing else to talk about.
Rent.
Ain't nothing to talk about.
Too
ain't nothing
damn
else to talk about. Ain't nothing to talk about. Ain't nothing else to talk about.
Rent.
Ain't nothing to talk about.
Too
ain't nothing
damn
else to talk about. Ain't nothing to talk about.
Jimmy McMillan, New York gubernatorial candidate of the rent is too damn high. You know, and sometimes these things seem silly. I always remember the story we hit not very long ago where pretty much everybody said they'd be happy with people randomly chosen from the phone book to run Congress. How could it go any worse? So those were our Obamasiah and election updates.
posted along, right along with that, our other War Whore updates, because, of course, he is the Commander-in-Chief. All of these wars are continuing under his approval and under all of our tacit complicity. Recruiters were first told to accept gay applicants. This has been a back-and-forth story. The military is accepting openly gay recruits for the first time in the nation's history, even as it tries in the courts to slow the movement to abolish its "don't ask, don't tell" policy. Some gay activist groups were planning to send people to enlist at recruiting stations to test the Pentagon's Tuesday announcement. Meanwhile, a federal judge in California whose ruling last week brought the 17-year policy the closest yet to being overturned was likely to reject the government's latest effort to halt her order telling the military to stop enforcing the law. Are you confused? After 17 years, this is again one of those cultural football stories. You wonder, are we still talking about this? So let's take the clip, because we got it from military.com and we got it from CNN, where, tying in with "don't ask, don't tell," Obama.
Breaking news on the Pentagon's "don't ask, don't tell" policy, which bars gays from serving openly in the military. Tonight, a federal judge in California denied the Obama administration's request that she suspend her own ruling, which struck down the policy as unconstitutional. Now, the administration will almost certainly appeal the decision, but it comes on the same day that we learned of a stunning recruitment change by the Pentagon. For the first time in the history of this country, the U.S. military is now telling its recruiters that they can accept openly gay and lesbian applicants. It made the change because of the federal judge's ruling. Former Army Lieutenant Dan Choi went to a recruiting station in New York today to re-up. He's a veteran of the Iraq War, an Arab linguist, and a West Point graduate who was discharged earlier this year after announcing he was gay. A short time ago, I spoke to Dan Choi. I also spoke to Alex Nicholson, founder and executive director of Service Members United, who was also discharged under the policy. He's a plaintiff in a case the judge ruled on. And our own Jeffrey Toobin, CNN senior legal analyst, joined in the discussion. Dan, you were discharged from the Army, a couple of months ago. Today, you actually went back to re-enlist. What happened?
They allowed me to re-enlist. They allowed me to sign up. We know that "don't ask, don't tell" has been dead for a week now, 7 days. And they're allowing people to sign up and be openly gay.
So, you walked into the Times Square recruiting office today.
That's right.
And you tried to join the Marine Corps, but you're too old for that.
A couple months too old.
So what did you sign up for?
The Army took me, and they're processing my paperwork right now. I was an officer before I graduated from West Point and served in Iraq, but now I get to follow my dreams. I want to be enlisted.
And did you tell them today that you're gay?
Yes. I said that I was discharged in a "don't ask, don't tell." I have no intention of keeping it secret. I want to sign up and serve with the full measure of integrity and honor and tell the truth of who I am. I don't intend to keep that part of my life silent.
And what was the reaction in the office among the soldier who you were talking to?
They were very professional. They're motivating and very inspirational. They told me all about what the Army is. And
they gave you the regular spiel? Really? That's kind of fascinating.
Well, there you have it. Don't ask, don't tell. Anytime this story comes rearing back as a cultural football, again, these issues that they use to divide and conquer all of us, when ultimately the families and the elites and the multi-generational serial killers, they don't give a damn about those things, but they know you do. Because they've taught you to. I can't help but always think of the late, great Bill Hicks. Anybody dumb enough to want to be in the military should be allowed to be in the military. Not to be too offensive to anyone out there. But there it is. I won't quote anymore. Let's continue the War Whores updates. And we'll jump to Raw Story. on the doctor who inspired the torture program now getting a $31 million Army contract. Psychologist whose research was used in constructing the U.S. program to torture terrorism suspects has been granted a $31 million no-bid Army contract to provide resilience training to U.S. soldiers. Mark Benjamin on Salon.com reports that the University of Pennsylvania psychologist Martin Seligman's research formed the psychological underpinnings of the Bush administration's torture program. In 2009, the New York Times described Martin Seligman's small but crucial role in the establishment of the enhanced interrogation techniques used on terrorism suspects before the techniques were suspended in 2008, with another long quote, of course, connected to CIA psychologists. There is a very real element of scientific dictatorship honed and practiced mind control techniques that have been going on for decades now. These things are replete within these stories. We always want to mention, I forget the guy's name, but of course the idea of using audio spotlights to beam audio into your head, beaming your favorite deity up into the sky that's been, of course, seeded with aluminum and barium to have a holographic projection. These things are all the Blue Beam, PSYOP, Fake Rapture, War of the Worlds, with the anniversary, Halloween weekend, coming up next weekend. Something's ripe. Something's getting ripe and smelling ripe. But I digress, and we'll save that for next week. Pentagon plans their record $60 billion weapons sale to Saudi Arabia. That's from the Washington Post. Of course, they made sure to get Israel's approval first. Danger Room reporting that Donald Rumsfeld, the man who brought you aspartame and armed North Korea and so much more, he is now reemerged on the web, on Twitter, on Facebook. You can follow Donald Rumsfeld and all his foundation-funded, think tank-connected, corporate administration, revolving door cronyism. And we mentioned it last week. Here it is on the record yet again. I had to chase the article around. Soldier says he was ordered to delete Fort Hood videos. CIA sues ex-agent for books breach of secrecy. No, this is not about Operation Dark Heart and Lieutenant Anthony Schaefer and his connection to Able Danger. This is about the CIA filing a breach of contract lawsuit against a former deep cover agent who's published a book critical of the agency without allowing CIA censors to remove large portions of the manuscript before publication. Ishmael Jones, pen name for the 20-year CIA veteran and Arabic speaker who said he sought to expose corruption in the agency, is facing a civil lawsuit over his 2008 book, The Human Factor, Inside the CIA's Dysfunctional Intelligence Culture, with the emphasis on cult. More on David Headley. Scout in Mumbai attacks was DEA informant while in terror camp, authorities say. That's from the Washington Post. An intelligence-connected informant was inside provocateuring what would be a national, international terror event, the Mumbai attacks. And in every case of a terror event, the big ones with capital letters, and their own graphics on the 24-hour corporate-controlled threataganda media machine. Always informants connected. Always intelligence connections, patsies and useful idiots and double agents and dupes and cutouts. And all of those things, again, as we say time and time again here. You see it in films all the time, but you don't think these things play out. Art imitating life, imitating politics, imitating Baudrillard, copy of a copy. So there's two there. The one from the Washington Post about David Headley, DEA informant, and more inside the Mumbai plot. We also have it from Al Jazeera. FBI was alerted to Mumbai plot. So you have insider, informants, forewarnings, prior knowledge, before and after the fact. Our last War Horrors note on this posting of Obamasiah War Horrors updates, selective service, and you can take the selective service any number of ways. Where we jump to, the foundation-funded, CFR-connected Huffington Post. Clinton official suggested letting U.S. plane be shot down to provoke war with Iraq. In the publicity sheet that St. Martin's Press has been sending out to spur interest in General Hugh Shelton's new memoir, Without Hesitation, The Odyssey of an American Warrior. The last highlight is a doozy. A high-ranking cabinet member suggests intentionally flying an American airplane on a low pass over Baghdad so as to guarantee it will be shot down, thus creating a natural excuse to retaliate and go to war. I'm fairly certain we've heard this story before, and it's already made the rounds out there. And we've seen these stories time and time again throughout history. Power-mad gangsters engineer events to further their control and agenda. That pretty much goes back to some type of eugenics-connected op where they want to get rid of you so they can have the resources. Tell us all to live for today. But they're building seed vaults. Is that all I have to say about that? I think so. I suppose the thing to mention would be to say, check out Corbett Report's article and video, When False Flags Don't Fly. A recent overview of some of the historical and contemporary events, the big terror events that, again, always have intelligence connections, always have forewarnings, always have prior knowledge, always have accessories before and after the fact, destruction of evidence, and they're always used to fast forward some type of agenda move that, again, inevitably always comes out that they were already planning for, whether they were amassing at Afghanistan, already had the Patriot Act written and on the shelf, waiting for catalyzing catastrophic event. So, speaking of such events, and again, all swirling around these times, we'll return to my home state of West Virginia, where we have the former governor resigning and running for the late Robert Byrd's Senate seat. So that's Governor Joe Manchin, Democrat, running against John Racey, well-funded GOP. But there are two third-party candidates. Jesse Johnson, who I am connected to on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. Jesse for U.S. Senate. And we get this story from the West Virginia Gazette, the Charleston Gazette, WVGazette.com. Jesse Johnson, third-party West Virginia Senate candidate, questions 9/11 account. A third-party candidate in West Virginia's U.S. Senate race questions whether the September 11th attacks were masterminded by Osama bin Laden and carried out by al-Qaeda terrorists. Mountain Party nominee Jesse Johnson told the Associated Press that he is also not convinced that hijacked airliners caused the collapse of the buildings at the World Trade Center. Calling 9/11 a crime of the century, Johnson said it has never been investigated. He discounts the work of the bipartisan commission that issued a 585-page report on the attacks in 2004. Johnson at first declined to say what he thinks happened or who was behind it. He later said he didn't know who the culprits were, but he also questioned why U.S. air defenses did not stop the hijacked planes. I believe I saw some bit of backpedaling going on following this story. And the one comment that we do have on this posting, Jesse Johnson questions 9/11 account, gets into no quotation marks and all of these other things that swirled around this story and maybe what he did or didn't say. Could this be another example of someone speaking their mind, and then when they get called out and it raises the uproar, especially when you're talking about 9/11 crazy conspiracies like the commission report, a lot of folks backpedal. So again, you can see the links, and I don't have time to break down this whole Daily Mail, Gazette, Associated Press story. But thanks to the comments there. And again, implore you to make comments, make contact any way you can over in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. So whether he backpedaled or not, we have the link up to C-SPAN. They have the full West Virginia Senate debate where, again, Joe Manchin, John Racey, Jesse Johnson of the Mountain Party, but there was also a fourth guy. And I watched about the first 15 or 20 minutes of the debate, and that was all I got several nights ago. The fourth guy, the Constitution Party guy, his beginning was kind of embarrassing, and I almost had to turn away and couldn't really look at him. I was listening, but he just wasn't well-spoken. He was maybe really nervous. I don't know. I wish I would have stayed tuned that Monday night, because then I would have scooped what ultimately We Are Change Branson did and got the video where in this debate, Jeff Becker, running for Senate in West Virginia in the Constitution Party, raised questions about the foreknowledge of Building 7's collapse on September 11th during a live televised debate that was carried nationally on C-SPAN. Indeed, even he announces proudly at the top of his very own homepage, calling for a new Senate investigation of 9/11, or just a straight investigation. It's a little garbled. We need to take a look, a first-hand look at what happened on 9/11. There were actually three buildings that collapsed on September 11th. So again, had I been a little more diligent, I would have scooped this story, and it would have been very fitting, because again, this all connects back very intimately in a way, back to my home state of West Virginia. So one way or the other, both of the third party candidates in the West Virginia Senate race are, to some degree, 9/11 truthers. So let's hear a little bit from Jeff Becker of the Constitution Party, running for the Senate seat in West Virginia, talk about the official 9/11 conspiracy.
As a former member of the Air National Guard and as a member of the Constitution Party, what is your position on the continued buildup of American troops in Afghanistan?
I think we need to first take a look at what happened on September 11th. There were actually three buildings that collapsed on September 11th. World Trade Center 7 was two blocks away from the Twin Towers. I think this is important to consider because it was not rained on by any debris. It was just a 40-story building. And at 5 p.m. on 9/11, Jane Stanley, the reporter for the BBC, was standing at ground zero and reported that Building 7 collapsed, when in fact, you could still see it over her shoulder. And then 20 minutes later, it did collapse. This is foreknowledge, and it needs to be investigated. Additionally, Larry Silverstein, the owner of World Trade Center 7 complex, before 9/11 had taken out a multi-billion-dollar insurance policy to protect his property against a terrorist attack. And then in 2002, on a PBS station interview, he said that he gave the order to pull it. Pull it is a controlled demolition term. More evidence of foreknowledge. These are facts. You can watch the interview. You can look. You can get the BBC footage. How did the British know 20 minutes ahead of time that this was going to happen? This needs to be investigated. There is a preponderance of anomalies surrounding the events on 9/11. Architects and engineers, over 1,000 degreed and licensed architects and engineers have looked at the information, and there's so much information that needs to be, that doesn't make sense for the official story. The only way for the official story to make sense is if the laws of physics had changed on that day. And I'm an engineer, and I can tell you that they did not change.
Mr. Becker?
An amazing blast of 9/11 truth from Jeff Becker, the Constitution Party in the West Virginia Senate race. My hat's off to a fellow West Virginian. We'll continue in that vein, but first, I'm now in Portland, Oregon. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show at MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Coming to you live every Friday morning, thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, streaming live video on ustream.tv, simulcast worldwide on the web, thanks to zeropointradio.com. Hello to Casper. Hello to Wyoming. 92.3 FM, 1670 AM. The worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. And again, all the other fantastic affiliates who help spread the Media Monarchy message, I suppose. We're into hour number two of this episode 191, and again, it's October 22nd, 2010, the year we make contact. So we've gone through the selection news, we've gone through the war whores and the Obamasiah and all the crony connected banksters and gangsters and left right dog and pony show, mini dog and pony. However, Jeff Becker leads us right into all our other 9/11 updates posted up Osama October opinions, where we'll begin. Unbelievably enough, that's right, and he, you know, of course, did just put out a single recently, sort of benefit, bringing attention to the environment. And here he is again, Bin Laden being protected by Pakistani intelligence, so says CNN. NATO officials believe that Osama bin Laden and his deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, are living in safe houses in Pakistan and are being protected by Pakistan's intelligence services, according to this report from Barbara Starr and CNN.
Well, not Barbara Starr, who's in Afghanistan, talking with senior NATO officials about information regarding the potential whereabouts of Osama bin Laden, pointing to northwest Pakistan. She's on the phone with us this morning. Barbara, what are you learning today?
Well, John, good morning. You know, it's funny, when you come here, most of the time people will tell you, oh, we don't know anything about where bin Laden is. That's not the answer we got when I spoke to a senior NATO official who said the best assessment right now, indeed, is he is very much alive, living in relative comfort, and he is in northwest Pakistan. As this official said, nobody in the al-Qaeda leadership is out living in a cave right now, that they are in homes, living in relative comfort, and the belief is that Osama bin Laden is, in fact, probably living nearby his number two, Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri. Not together, that would be a security risk, and that he may have ranged at some point over some wide area of northwest Pakistan. He could have gone as far north as an area called Chitral near the Chinese border, but he may well be in a very interesting area called the Karam Valley of Pakistan, which basically is right across the border from Tora Bora, where he fled Afghanistan in late 2001 when the U.S. military was bombing that area, John.
So it sounds like he never got too far in the fall of 2001. But what's the sense there in Afghanistan? I mean, obviously, it might have some impact on terror threats, because it's believed that bin Laden signed off on this latest terror threat against targets in Europe. But if he's caught, killed, whatever, is it going to make a difference there in Afghanistan?
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, the overwhelming feeling is it will not make a difference on the ground here in Afghanistan. The question remains, is there progress or isn't there? Now, General David Petraeus is very adamant that there is progress, that they are moving forward here, and that they are making, he will be able to report to President Obama right during the election season later this year that they are making progress. But this top NATO official I spoke to had somewhat of a more nuanced view. I mean, listen to this. He says that right now there is the ability of the insurgency to still muster upwards of 30,000 fighters, both in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and that there are perhaps as many as a million disaffected young men in this area, the age 15 to 25, and unless the Afghan government of Hamid Karzai can begin to deal with those challenges, there's no way this is all going to work out. John?
Yeah, it continues to be a major problem. Barbara Starr for us on the ground in Afghanistan. Barbara, thanks.
Oh, yes. Barbara Starr, thanks so much. A nuanced look. So that gets us into our 9/11 updates. Osama is hiding in Pakistan, and he's being protected by, as they said, by the ISI. Longtime listeners will know we've broken down many, many times the intimate connections between Inter-Services Intelligence of Pakistan and the Central Intelligence Agency of America. Could this be an October surprise? We're entering the territory. Strange things happen during a full moon. NATO official says bin Laden and deputy hiding in northwest Pakistan. So let's move from one boogeyman to another, where Ahmadinejad calls for, of course, a 9/11 investigation.
On the second day of his visit to Lebanon, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has met with Lebanese politicians in Beirut to discuss the latest developments in the Middle East. Ahmadinejad arrived in Lebanon on Wednesday to a rapturous welcome organized by the Shiite military group Hezbollah. His country is the main patron of the group, the most powerful military force in Lebanon. During a meeting with Lebanese politicians on Thursday morning, Ahmadinejad repeated controversial remarks on the September 11, 2001 terror attacks in the US.
An event called September the 11th occurred, which was used as an excuse for occupying the region. And then when we tell them, let the truth about the incident be investigated, they get angry and start threatening. They don't allow any investigations. Because if the truth about the Holocaust on September the 11th was revealed, it would become clear that all these are just excuses for occupying our region.
Meanwhile, the UN peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon and the Lebanese army have increased the number of troops on the border with Israel during Ahmadinejad's trip to the area.
So they tie in some of the other geopolitical updates, but of course, having Ahmadinejad as the main spokesman for 9/11 Truth is, of course, very useful to our misleaders and gangsters and banksters. He, of course, just mentioned the Holocaust. You know, all he would need to do is just throw in a mention about global warming being a hoax, and that would be the hat trick. But in reality, Ahmadinejad is not the only one calling for a new investigation of the catalyzing catastrophic events of 9/11. Here are just some of the latest. Maritime Union of Australia Secretary Kevin Bracken calls 9/11 a conspiracy. This from dailytelegraph.com.au. So, an Australian politico being swept up into the anti-9/11 question furor. There are some videos from the IntelHub.com 9/11 Truth Raids University of Florida Homecoming Parade. And a story that I suppose we could file under Air Farce One, reminding us of the Obama gang's stunt flying an Air Force One lookalike around Ground Zero. But this time it was on the West Coast, where a 747 stunt over the Golden Gate Bridge reminds onlookers of 9/11. That's from The Telegraph, and you can also just watch some of the raw video. A commentary piece from Colleen Rowley, posted on the Los Angeles Times website, latimes.com, WikiLeaks and 9/11, what if? As we're awaiting the most massive intel leak in history from WikiLeaks, Colleen Rowley, a 9/11 whistleblower, asked the question, if we had something like WikiLeaks, could something like 9/11 have been prevented? We'll never really have the answers to those questions. MSNBC getting into it with a little poll question. Do you believe 9/11 conspiracy theories? Of course, giving no context or any kind of variance in what you want to say. But there's also an opinion piece, an amazing, well-documented piece on digitaljournal.com. Time to review a post-9/11 mentality and face reality. As we say week after week, 9/11 truth is not going away and has not gone away and is only going to get larger and larger as more folks realize on all sides of all the phony political spectrum set up for us that 9/11 truth ends wars. 9/11 truth ends phony, corrupt Congress and administrations. 9/11 truth takes the favorite tool of the elites and oligarchs, false flag terrorism, and shows it to everybody. Like a Darren Brown, if you will. But a great piece from foreignpolicyjournal.com. Newly disclosed documents shed more light on early Taliban offers and Pakistan role. U.S. government documents obtained through FOIA requests recently posted on the George Washington University National Security Archive shed some additional light on talks with the Taliban prior to 9/11, including with regard to the repeated Taliban offers to hand over Osama bin Laden and the role of Pakistan before and after the attacks. So there is something to Barbara Starr and CNN reporting the Pakistan connections, because we know they're there. Just as we know Saddam Hussein had chemical weapons, because we had the receipts. More documentation leading to direct foreknowledge and provocative catalyzing events leading up to 9/11. And again, they never report on the Taliban's... Man, if you guys show us some evidence, we'll try and hand over bin Laden to you. Tim Osman, OSS man. But so many amazing things spilling out around 9/11 questions, digging into the past, and this story got quite a bit of coverage, but not nearly enough, and there are clips, but you'll have to catch them yourself. Al-Qaeda mastermind invited to Pentagon after 9/11. Al-Qaeda terror mastermind Anwar al-Awlaki, A-W-L-A-K-I, and we do provide a handy-dandy link for you to his entry on the complete 9/11 timeline, thanks to historycommons.org. Al-Qaeda leader dined at the Pentagon just months after 9/11. The man who helped plot the aborted Christmas Day bombing, the Fort Hood shooting, the Times Square bombing attempt, and who also preached to the alleged 9/11 hijackers dined at the Pentagon just months after 9/11, documents obtained by Fox News show. American-born cleric Awlaki's role as a key figure in almost every recent terror plot targeting the U.S. and Canada, coupled with his visit to the Pentagon, only confirms our long-stated position that Awlaki is a chief terrorist patsy handler for the CIA. He is the federal government's premier false flag agent. Documents exclusively obtained by Fox News, including an FBI interview conducted after the Fort Hood shooting in November 2009, state that Awlaki was taken to the Pentagon as part of the military's outreach program to the Muslim community in the immediate aftermath of the attacks, states the report, and there are links to PDFs for you. I'm sure it's just an accident. I'm sure it was also an accident that Portugal and others were meeting with ISI Mahmoud Ahmed, the alleged wirer of $100,000 to Muhammad Atta, who was alleged to, of course, have been identified by Abel Danger and Lieutenant Anthony Schaefer in burning his new book, Operation Darkheart. It's all quite the rich tapestry. Broken down quite well with another great article from Paul Craig Roberts, posted up on Sign of the Times, "The War on Terror is a Fraud." That's quite simple. Our last 9/11 update note is a positive one, I suppose. Anonymous donor leaves $10,000 in cash for 9/11 Memorial in New York. This from DNAinfo.com. It would be a hell of a lot better if they would have left $10,000 cash for the dying first responders. Not for some occult memorial obelisk scene to be built. So there are just some of the deluge of constant fleshing out of the possible, probable realities of the events of September 11th, now 9-plus years ago. We'll now turn to another story that we covered on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Pilot refuses naked body scanner and pat-down. Or, as The Atlantic notes, one pilot's revolt, the latest security theater update. A pilot who refused to submit to a full body scan or the alternative pat-down going through airport security said the procedure violates his rights. Michael Roberts, a pilot for ExpressJet Airlines, refused a full body scan last week at a TSA checkpoint in Memphis at the Memphis International Airport. Again, this connects to so many things. As we talked about, Alaki and the underpants bomber, of course, that being exposed as a drill with a handler. The well-dressed man. Kurt Haskell's story as a witness to the underwear bomber. Debunked. All the bizarre connections to the Hassan Fort Hood shooting, including the most recent thing we already read to you in this episode, where a soldier was ordered to delete videos he took of this shooting. We're going to close out this episode with a strange case of the latest mass murder contagion drills gone live shooter events. But I digress. Opting out of scanning is permitted, but those who opt out must receive an enhanced pat-down from a TSA employee. Michael Roberts noted that pat-down is misleading. This is just one case. But imagine the power in numbers. Pilot refuses naked body scanner and pat-down.
He's the pilot who refused to go through one of those new full body scans at Memphis International. He wasn't interested in option B either, a manual pat-down, which he says is like getting groped. The TSA said, sorry then, you're not getting through security. So tonight the pilot goes one-on-one about his personal protest.
That's outrageous, and I'm not okay with it.
What ExpressJet pilot Michael Roberts is calling outrageous are these full-body scanners.
It's just not necessary to see people's naked bodies.
So when the TSA told him to go through, just like these folks are doing, he said no.
I'm not going to do it at all. Never, not once, am I going to show them my naked body.
He says that's when the agent called out, we've got an opt-out. He says she also reported the opt-out into her handheld radio.
Kind of seemed pretty frantic about that, that I didn't want to be scanned.
The airport authority says he has the right to opt out. We all do.
He was offered a full-body pat-down, which he did not wish to partake in either.
I'm not really on board with federal agents putting their hands on me every time I show up to work.
He didn't make it to work this time because he wasn't let through security, so he went home. He knows this could put his job in jeopardy.
Better people than I have, sacrificed far more than their careers, their livelihood, for the cause of freedom. And Americans need to wake up and stand up.
He says his protest is about protecting everyone's civil liberties. But some travelers say they're more concerned about their safety in the sky.
I lived in New York City when they had the Twin Towers, and I watched one of them fall. So I'm all for anything that can prevent any kind of accidents or terrorists.
Robert says the images from the scanner are much more graphic than the TSA would have us all believe. He wrote an extensive blog about his experience. You can read the whole thing by going to our website at WREG.com.
He refused a full body scan and then a pat down at Memphis International Airport.
Tonight, hear from the pilot who says he's standing up for people's privacy.
Good evening, I'm Joe Birch.
I'm Ursula Madden, Action News 5. Jamel Major is live tonight with the story. Jamel.
Ursula, Michael, Roberts say while safety is very important, there needs to be a better system in place to keep passengers safe. That way, a person's privacy and civil rights won't be violated. What started out as a normal day at work for Michael Roberts turned out to be all but normal.
I did exactly what I have done for the last 4.5 years to get to work, but this time they wanted to put their hands on me.
Roberts, a pilot for ExpressJet Airlines Incorporated based in Houston, says he felt going through a full body scanner at the Memphis International Airport would be an invasion of privacy.
They wanted me to take off my shoes to go through the scanner. And I told him that, you know, I didn't want to go through the scanner.
Roberts says a TSA agent told him because he opted out of the scan, he'd have to go through a secondary screening, which meant he would have to be frisked.
Bottom line is I'm not especially comfortable with being frisked by a agent of the federal government every day on my way to work.
After Roberts said no to both the full body scan and pat down, another officer approached him, saying a report would have to be filed with the Transportation Security Operations Center. The officer asked for Roberts' driver's license, supervisor's name, and the number for the airline where Roberts worked. TSA officials released a statement saying, quote, advanced imaging technology is optional for all passengers. Passengers who decline to be screened using advanced imaging technology will receive alternative screening to ensure the safety of the traveling public. Anyone who refuses screening will be denied access to the secure area.
Evidently, they saw my discomfort with the situation as a threat to air transportation security.
Now, after the incident, Robert says he was told that he was free to leave the airport. Now, since then, he has been taking time off from work and he is seeking legal advice.
If you tolerate this, your children will be next. One pilot stands up against the naked body scanners, not to even mention the detrimental health effects if he would go through this thing every time he would go to his work. Damaging your DNA, you know, the backscatter x-rays. Destroying you on a number of levels. Physically and spiritually, consciously, because this is all a war on consciousness. Let us never forget that. So, all of those things are there for you to connect dots to. The body scanners, the underwear bomber, Awalaki, 9/11 questions, all of these things. Posted below this story, pilot refuses naked body scanner. We have our police state updates where a story we also note, again, thanks to my man Alan from Omaha, posting on cyberspacewar.com, NSA cartoons encourage kids to spy on their families. Here the link goes to Gawker.com. All the other police state updates. Supreme Court restricts right to have a lawyer during police questioning. That's from VancouverSun.com. Police misconduct costs New York City taxpayers nearly $1 billion to settle claims. That's from ActivistPost.com. U.S. government does not have effective control of 1,000-plus miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. So says Department of Homeland Stupidity, with a link to CNSNews.com. Even though the drones are flying, the agents are swarming, becoming the perfect storm for some catalyzing catastrophic event, tying in the immigration meme, the drug war memes, the North American Union, all of those things. Here it is again, Santa Fe using radio frequency tracking badges, this time from GalvestonDailyNews.com. Urban Shield exercise brings law enforcement to the Bay Area. More on that from ABC Local. STLtoday.com notes the Exterminator. Exterminator armored truck will watch Illinois neighborhoods. Creative law enforcement isn't new to St. Clair County Sheriff Merle Justice. Last year, the dean of the region's chief cop sponsored a haunted crack house that used an old Grange Hall to depict the life of a young drug addict. Before that, Justice publicized a drug house of the week aimed at shaming dealers into leaving town, but on Tuesday his deputies lifted a plastic tarp to unveil his newest idea, an armored truck to park in neighborhood problem neighborhoods as a vandal-proof platform to transmit live pictures. I thought about a lot of names. I thought the cockroach would have been appropriate, but we just settled on the exterminator. The donated and rebuilt armored truck once used to carry cash fitted with cameras, digital recorders, and gear to stream live videos. This is what they're rolling out for us. We better be building our own. And here's another case of intelligence-connected patsies. Patsies convicted in the New York synagogue bombing case. A federal jury in New York has convicted four men of plotting to blow up Jewish synagogues and target military aircraft. James Cromite, David Williams, Anta Williams, and Laguerre Payen were arrested after planting what they believed were real bombs at synagogues in Bronx during a sting operation carried out by the FBI in May 2009. The note here is that FBI informant had promised dim-witted mastermind of supposed terrorist group a BMW, a barbershop, $250,000 in cash if he carried out the attack. This informant, Shahid Hussein, testified on cross-examination in federal court in Manhattan that he bought food and paid rent for James Cromite. Hussein, a.k.a. Malik, played a similar role 4 years ago in an Albany case. In both cases, Malik did not stumble upon active terror cells plotting to bring destruction on American soil. Instead, in both Newburgh and Albany, he needed long periods of time to recruit his Muslim contacts, spin elaborate tales about his terror contacts, and develop solid plans of action, all the while providing the defendants with large amounts of resources and cash incentives. Or so says the Village Voice. Online Journal further getting into four men railroaded in New York plot to bomb synagogues. I believe I read in the New York Times, as I do on my breaks at work, so I can read yesterday's news, that this was another victory for the informant use. And a defeat for the defense and their quite reasonable point that this was entrapment. Here's an interesting story that was really big and then died just as quickly. Random shots fired at Pentagon cause minor damage. I believe we'll have another note on that from Copycat Effect when we start blasting through the news purge. But our last note here on the police data updates, Gerald Celente, trends forecaster, noting quite bluntly, as he is very good at, on Russia Today, that essentially America lives in a fascist state.
Do you think Americans are aware of what's going on?
Yeah, they know about it. It's a new trend. America is going from what used to be the major capitalistic country in the world, a free market crusader, into what Mussolini would have called fascism, the merger of state and corporate powers. So it's not socialism as people believe it is. Socialism's egalitarianism. And it's not communism where it's state-controlled monopolies. It's fascism, plain and simple. The merger of corporate and government powers. State-controlled capitalism is called fascism. And fascism has come to America in broad daylight. But they're feeding it in little bits and pieces. First, AIG was too big to fail. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, a mortgage company, too big to fail. Banks, too big to fail. Auto companies, too big to fail. Now we're giving money to the people that make the auto parts. And now there's talk about the technology companies wanting their piece of the action. The merger of state and government is called fascism. Take it from Mussolini. He knew a thing or two about it.
What can Americans do if they are opposed to the road that the government officials are bringing us down?
Well, the people really don't have a choice. There is no ballot box. You know, I'm of Italian descent, and I've heard enough mafia stories for the rest of my life. If you want to look at a mafia, you could call it the Republican and Democratic Party. And if you want to look at the two families, the heads of the mafia, all you have to do is look at the Bushes and the Clintons. They've been running the show now for some 24 years. We heard about Obama, and he was going to bring in change. Yeah, change you could believe in. Yeah, change you could believe in if he's dumb, stupid, and blind. Look who he's brought in as his chief policymakers. Retreads from the old Clinton administration. It's a two-headed, one-party system. So it's very difficult for the people to vote in a new administration that isn't part of the old one.
There you have it. Gerald Celente noting, America now lives in, as Mussolini would describe it, in the merger of corporate and state power. It is fascism. We're now into the final half hour of this episode 191, and it's the lightning round. We've reached the 1021 news purge. Don't waste your time just looking back, which we take from our opening track from Keen and Kinane. We'll take BioWars EnviroHealth for 100. You ready? U.S. slips to 49th in life expectancy, study show. More on that from RawStory.com. Half of U.S. teens meet criteria for mental disorder, again from Raw Story. And from USWGO.com, confirmed. The new psychiatric manual, the DSM-4-TR, labels freethinkers, nonconformers, as mentally ill. You can grab the PDF for yourself from Scribd. Going right along with that, from BNet.com, how CNN and, I add in, CFRs, Sanjay Gupta became Big Pharma's favorite face. Could it be because drug companies pay 17,000 U.S. doctors? Report finds. More on that from Reuters. Scientific American writing that we need to kill more babies to save Earth. Paul Joseph Watson breaking that down. Interestingly enough, a 20-year-old embryo has now become a baby boy. Meanwhile, Polish bishops call in vitro fertilization the younger sister of eugenics. Look who's talking. Alleged leader of cult works as a psychologist. More on that from The Age out of Australia. Israel building underground facility in case of bioterror. More on that from bioprepwatch.com. Americans show concern about taking flu vaccine. That's from vaccinenewsdaily.com, and that had some military outlets visiting mediamonarchy.com. Food freedom covering the UN to vote on chemtrails, but of course, if you want to use their terminology, it's geoengineering. And our last BioWars EnviroHealth note is the first episode of the second season of Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Theory. This one is on the dastardly location known as Plum Island. Longtime listeners of the show will know that we've broken down this story in the past. Lab 257, its connections to Nazis and Lyme disease and more. You always have to ask yourself when these things break out, who could have made it? Where on earth could this have come from? The labs. But on to the drug war as we approach the vote. Pot the vote. Hashtag pot the vote. U.S. will enforce marijuana laws despite California vote. Again from Raw Story, Eric Holder talking out of both sides of his mouth. At first, when the Obamasiah Changeluya administration came in, they were saying, we're not going to prosecute things like this anymore. But, of course, it still goes on. Here's even the Los Angeles sheriff saying, pot legalization not going to pass, even if it passes. More on that from NewsJunkiePost.com. Meanwhile, Jocelyn Elders, the woman who lost her job by mentioning masturbation back in the early days of the Clinton regime, now, of course, noting that we should legalize marijuana, and of course, she's right on both points, but the talking heads and corporate-controlled media don't like it when people come out and speak the truth, and then you have to lose your job. The last drug war note, CVS fined $77 million for selling meth ingredients to criminals. And I suppose those millions give us our other econo-crash-related headlines. U.S. leaders destroying the dollar. That's from Press TV out of Iran. U.S. owes apparently $1.2 billion in their United Nations dues. Oh no, are they going to kick us out? More on that from Reuters. But here's at least a sheriff standing up. Actually, you know, what was it? Protect and serve, that's right. Chicago sheriff says no to enforcing foreclosures. More on that from CNBC. BusinessInsider.com gives us the Bank of America report that everyone was talking about. Of course, tying to MERS and foreclosure gate. But if we take it from money.cnn.com, and if you'll recall last week's episode, I believe, of NewWorldNextWeek.com, we noted how the military embeds PSYOPs soldiers within news outlets. They did it to CNN Money. But here they are reporting on 85% of college graduates move back home.
Personally, I learned from the recession that I'm very lucky because I think a lot of people don't have jobs, and I don't think that the government does enough for people who are hurting them.
I pretty much lost my job, I could tell you that much. And I had no money to eat, so I had to just go home, like straight home, and eat house food.
I mean, it's always hard being a college student. You know, you have to work on a tight budget and get a job.
You really have to be careful with your money nowadays. Even the savings that you had, they could be gone, you know, the next day.
Well, it's hard to get an apartment, or sometimes easier, depending on where you are.
I'm in graduate school, so a lot of people go back to graduate school since the labor market is not doing so well. So it made admissions more difficult to get in.
Kind of looking at college now with a sense of trepidation, you know, how are we going to pay for it? You know, I'm working for Columbia right now, and that's helping. And, you know, just hopefully your parents help you out a little bit, and you can pay them back later, you know.
Mommy and Daddy are not as reliable as they once were.
It made getting government funds extremely difficult. In fact, I'm actually still waiting for the funds to get submitted by Department of Education.
There's been recessions throughout, like, all of United States history. Roll with the punches. We'll figure it out and get out of it hopefully soon.
That's wishful thinking, my man. You got to get to the root and not bat around the branches. We've got to strike at the root. And we don't have time to go into all of the money truth right here. Our last note on EconoCrash updates is a great rant on the banksters from Dylan Radigan, who is another of corporate-controlled media who seems to come out of nowhere and really, really speak to folks. Whether they're just being used as that release valve to let people feel like, yeah, they get it. That guy on that corporate-controlled outlet is really speaking for me. That doesn't take away from the truth that he speaks. But again, we want to get at the underlying, the text and the subtext and the context. Let's move on to geopolitics, where Angela Merkel says Germany's multicultural society has failed. That's from the AFP. And Merkel says that basically everybody needs to assimilate and become Christian, and we're not going to tolerate any of you crazy brown people who believe in your crazy made-up God. You need to believe in our crazy made-up God. Militants stage deadly raid on the Chechen parliament. More on that from, again, the AFP. And a scary story, if only because it seems to have a precluded outcome. From the Upshot, 20-year-old female college student named police chief in violence-plagued Mexican town after nobody else would apply. That unfortunately sounds like a TV movie waiting to happen. As unfortunately it ties into what we already referred to, the border wars, the immigration, the drug war, North American Union, all of those things. Racing down the history mystery list through our news purge with an interesting one again from the Upshot. Ex-Secret Service officer almost accidentally shot LBJ the night after JFK's assassination. Retired Secret Service agent Gerald Blaine, B-L-A-I-N-E, has a book coming out, The Kennedy Detail, that contains a rather stunning revelation. In the chaotic wake of the power transfer that took place after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, Blaine says he almost shot Lyndon Johnson when he mistook him for an intruder inside Johnson's D.C. home. Instinctively, Blaine picked up the Thompson submachine gun and activated the bolt on the top. Now, while that is an interesting tidbit, it's far more interesting to look at that second photo taken in Air Force One after the main photo everybody knows where LBJ's swearing in, and you can see Jack Valenti crouched down in the background. The next photo where he turns around and winks to his bankster gangster friends. Far more interesting, of course, too, would be the story of the Secret Service agents who were called off of JFK's motorcade. Google that. But our other history mystery notes, time capsule from 1887 found in Ireland. More on that from IrishTimes.com. And our last history mystery note is something, again, these stories from the past come blaring out. And fortunately, this gives the all-around story that, again, the past comes back to bite us in the ass. Anita Hill responds to Clarence Thomas's wife, saying she has no intention of apologizing.
But we are going to begin today. With that out-of-the-blue voicemail left for Anita Hill, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas asked her to apologize for saying Thomas sexually harassed her all those years ago. Jake Tapper broke the story, and he has more from Washington. Jake?
Good morning, George. Well, the story was first actually reported by Mark Matthews of ABC's San Francisco station, KGO. Initially, Anita Hill thought the call was a prank, and she reported it to campus police, but it was no prank.
Prepared to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Since those contentious Supreme Court confirmation hearings back in 1991...
My name is Anita F. Hill.
Anita Hill has become a professor, now at Brandeis University. But a few days ago, she got a surprising voicemail message. She let ABC News hear it. Good morning, Anita Hill. It's Jenny Thomas, the message said. I would love you to consider an apology sometime and some full explanation of why you did what you did with my husband. So give it some thought and certainly pray about this and come to understand why you did what you did. For some, that almost 20-year-old saga may be difficult to remember, but the charges were explosive. In 1991, Hill accused now Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment.
Judge Thomas began to use work situations to discuss sex.
From my standpoint, as a black American, as far as I'm concerned, it is a high-tech lynching.
When Thomas published his autobiography 3 years ago, he and his wife reflected on those days with Jan Crawford.
I think she owes us an apology, and I look forward to receiving that phone call or that visit one day.
This week, Virginia Thomas confirmed she left the voice message for Hill, saying she was, quote, extending an olive branch to her after all these years. No offense was ever intended. But Hill told me, quote, it was in no way conciliatory for her to begin with the presumption that I did something wrong in 1991. I simply testified to the truth of my experience. For her to say otherwise is not extending an olive branch. It's accusatory.
And George Hill told me, I don't apologize. I have no intention of apologizing, and I stand by my testimony from 1991. George?
So it doesn't sound like they're going to be having any phone call anytime soon. Okay, Jake Tapper, thanks very much.
Or if I can quote from Sonic Youth's Youth Against Fascism, black robe and swill, I believe Anita Hill. So those are our history mystery updates, which leads right into our holy hexes with an interesting story from clicktohouston.com. Jesus does not care.
Slogans on church marquees are nothing new, but rarely do rhymes and verses get the attention of these four words at the corner of 360 and Debbie Lane. Someone read, Jesus does not care, and tore down the plywood sign.
Some people have been unhappy with it because they see the phrase itself and they don't look past the phrase, because it is true. Jesus doesn't care about a lot of things.
The community at Lake Ridge wanted some attention for its new message series about forgetting your past. The pastors didn't expect the violent backlash.
So why not Jesus doesn't care about your past?
We created something quite compelling, didn't we?
The Mansfield Church sent out thousands of flyers to get people to its website.
I have a message for the liar, for the cheat, for the prostitute.
Traffic has tripled this month with more than 40,000 page views. But not all of the attention is positive, with some visitors calling the campaign a satanic joke and not a good way to spread the word. Others ask the church to remove the signs. The community at Lake Ridge says the signs will go away once the readers hear the real message.
We were hoping to stir the pot a little bit and maybe wake us up to what he really does care about ultimately is what we want to get the message across.
JesusDoesNotCare.com. Is it all a satanic joke? Those holy hexes are quite fitting again as we rapidly approach Samhain and Halloween and October surprise selection time. Our other holy hex notes, Dead Sea Scrolls going digital online. More on that from Faith World. An interesting interview from the Belief blog on CNN where punk rock professor Greg Graffin of Bad Religion explains Anarchy Evolution, his new book. And, of course, Bad Religion have been around for now nearly 30 years. I didn't know he was a professor teaching evolution. But there you go. Our last two holy hexes relate to the Vatican. Carla Bruni, banned from the Vatican. That would be Sarkozy's sexy wife, and that connects to other ridiculous things. But not nearly as ridiculous as Dole. Vatican declares Bart and Homer Simpson Catholic. Now, how they reach that logic, I'm not exactly sure. Are they just going by that recent episode where Bart goes to a Catholic school, Liam Neeson and all that? I don't know. We don't have time for it here. But that segues into our media memes as we're flying through the news purge here. A lot of celeb deaths coming piled more than three, where we note, I speak jive. Barbara Billingsley, Leave It to Beaver mom dead at 94. Happy Days dad Tom Bosley dead at 83. Penthouse founder Bob Guccione dead at 79. And The Slits lead singer Ari Up dead at 48. VigilantCitizen.com getting into Katy Perry's latest charade, this time as a sex kitten. In new perfume advertisements, Rihanna makes dark demands, and again, VigilantCitizen.com gets into all the occult symbolism surrounding all our favorite pop stars. But we twist back into the politics, and again, this brings us into the phony left-right swirl, because of course, if you do a little bit of research, you know they're all intimately connected. Soros millions buying political reporters for NPR. That's from ChicagoNow.com. So this story bandied about by the left and right. George Soros, of course, who ratted out his fellow Jews to Nazis. That's a fact. He's a convicted financial criminal. That's a fact. But he's well-funded. He's having the crisis of his life. This is what all his work has led towards. All those quotes are available. Meet George Soros is a great way to start from CorbettReport.com. But as soon as that happened, it was overshadowed, of course, by NPR firing analyst Juan Williams over his Muslim comment. You can get more on that from CNN and from all around the world. But as we've noted, Rick Sanchez recently fired for implying that Jews run the media. Helen Thomas fired a few months before. So it's happening from both sides, the phony left, the phony right, firing their front talking heads when they're not talking correctly. Keeping us in the divide and conquer scheme. So all of that is still developing, and I'm sure more will spill out, but we're not going to spend any more time on it. We're going to move into Murder and Mayhem, where here's a nice little three-part story for you. And again, this is why we pay attention. Because the first story from CranesDetroit.com, autopsy points to drowning for banker David Widlack. Then the second one was banker's family commissions an independent autopsy. They suggest foul play. So then, second autopsy shows banker had, a gunshot wound to the head. It wasn't a drowning at all. Another strange bankster-connected death and copycat effect getting into geometric shootings connected to the recent quote-unquote random shooting at the Pentagon. Doesn't seem like anything's very random, though. Our last couple of notes, Oregon oddities in West Virginia worry. First, we note that Fritz Springmeier, the author of Bloodlines of the Illuminati and tons of other books and lectures and videos, is rumored to have been released from prison and is staying in a halfway house in Portland, Oregon. I've got my peoples on it, and I'm trying to connect up with Fritz Springmeier, hopefully to bring you an exclusive first released from prison interview, which would be, I think, amazing for everybody. So if you know anything about that, mediamonarchy@gmail.com, and more details as they become available. The other note of Oregon oddities, 5 Portland area counties join pet evacuation disaster drill. That's right, they're not just acclimating the military and the civilians to the military taking over in the event of a national emergency. They're training your pets, too. Your pets that all now have RFID chips implanted in them. But on to West Virginia worry from BroadbandReports.com. Verizon throwing a West Virginia party to celebrate their own cunning, ignoring a decade of infrastructure neglect. That story is pretty damning, and it ties into Verizon and then Frontier and what is and isn't being done to and for internet and i.e. information to my home state of West Virginia. Another note I didn't know is sources back to April of this year from Herald Mail. WVU, that's West Virginia University, sealed a deal to buy the Martinsburg Mall. Now, those two places are hours away from each other. Could we file this under another dead mall story? Deadmalls.com. That amazingly blasts through the news purge, the 1021 news purge. Don't waste your time just looking back. You can't always be looking back, even though we look back through the week to dissect and analyze the news, text, subtext, context. So much is in there that we just blow over and breeze through, and sometimes it becomes more important later as, again, folks get in touch with me and share articles, whether they're doing it on the website or commenting or Facebook or any other ways, again, growing and spreading and getting more folks involved. Trying to add more members to this one-man band. So in the case of breezing through a story and then more details fleshing out, our final story on this episode 191 returns to a shooting that happened 2 weeks ago today. We reported it last Friday on the 15th, because again, sometimes when it hits Friday, as I say, I try and include as much up-to-date information as possible, but of course in all the other pre- and post-production of getting the show ready for publication and syndication and all of those things with the website and the plate spinning, I miss some of the bigger stories and miss fleshing out things that I do mention, but perhaps don't mention an integral part of it. But that's how we have to work together. My man Cole Havoc has been doing a lot of great work on deadlinelive.info. You can hit him up on Twitter at Cole Havoc, C-U-L-H-A-V-O-C. On the story we referred to last week as the Carlsbad school shooting, and I believe we even played a quick clip coming out of San Diego. This happened at the Kelly Elementary Schoolyard. So we'll take it from Cole Havoc, writing on deadlinelive.info. On Friday, October 8th, Brendan O'Rourke entered Kelly Elementary Schoolyard during noon recess, carrying a .357 Magnum and firing on students, allegedly striking two of them in the arm. After firing six shots, O'Rourke fled the schoolyard and attempted to reload his handgun. A construction crew working at the school cafeteria was able to catch O'Rourke and hold him until the police arrived on the scene. Stephanie Durkee, a campus monitor at the school for 17 years, said O'Rourke was yelling when he entered the playground and started shooting. Durkee said O'Rourke shouted, "Death to Obama, kill all the little fags, death to them." Durkee said when she asked him what he was doing, he replied, "This is a drill and these are blanks."
Now, it's I guess sheer luck, and I should point out, Bridget, that we are hearing that maybe two children were slightly wounded. We're hearing that. Those are unconfirmed reports, But Carlos, you're telling me that you didn't, at least what you saw, you didn't see any children that were hit by the gunfire.
That's a big negative.
But it was literally, how close was the gunman to the children?
I said like probably arm's distance, 10 feet.
Point blank.
Point blank. I'm surprised they didn't get no one.
And how many shots?
I heard six shots.
You heard six shots, mm-hmm. So he's firing six shots. We think maybe one or two of those shots might have grazed two children, but again, that's unconfirmed. But to your thinking, you didn't see any of the children injured or hurt.
Like that.
Have the police questioned you?
Yes, they have.
Uh-huh. And you've told them essentially what you told us?
Exactly.
Durkee is a longtime Kelly Elementary campus monitor. 17 years on the job she loves, but says she had never experienced anything like this.
I went on out to look, and that's when I seen a guy running, chasing the children, with a gun and a gas can.
That's when she says her instincts kicked in. She grabbed this whistle, something she has with her each day without fail, and blew it louder than she ever has before.
And all the kids started running to the doors because we drill them on that for lockdown.
So loud, in fact, the whistle also caught the suspect, Brendan O'Rourke's, attention.
He came running by me, and I said to him, well, what the hell are you doing? And he said that this is a drill and these are blanks. And at the time, I didn't know there was two little wounded.
This is a drill and these are blanks. Investigators plan to re-interview Durkee, and the U.S. Secret Service is looking into the account due to the reference to Obama. Carlos Partida, one of the construction workers who held O'Rourke until police arrived, was asked if he saw any of the children being struck by the bullets which were fired at close range. His reply, that's a big negative. In a clip, Carlos Partida also says that he's surprised O'Rourke didn't hit no one. I didn't see anyone fall or nothing like that. Families are not speaking to the media. O'Rourke has had a history of bizarre behavior, anxiety attacks, claiming the government put satellites in his head and were controlling him. But he's pled not guilty. Why would a guy who got busted close range by observers try and plead not guilty? This article from Cole Havoc gets into all of the other connections, all of the other oddities, all of the other eyewitness stories, and the connections, of course, to exercises and drills. Events like these seem to immediately follow drills and exercises, such as in this case. This article goes through fleshing out other shootings which followed the drills quite closely, as they always do. And unfortunately, we don't have time to go through all that. Huge thanks to Cole Havoc. The related to this story, posted at the bottom, is another shooter event. Two were fatally shot at a Tennessee post office on the 18th. People literally going postal. We'll glance back at the breaking news on this nearly noon Friday, October 22nd. New massive release to put Iraq War and WikiLeaks in spotlight. Again, the world waiting with bated breath for these 400,000-plus secret documents. Meanwhile, that wouldn't seem very important to the folks experiencing the cholera outbreak in Haiti. Meanwhile, G20 nations split over Geithner's trade plan. The gangsters, the banksters, the international multi-generational serial killers running wild around the world, my friends. And that's why we try and break it all down for you here. Independent, alternative, commercial-free news source. If you find it valuable, please donate. The button's there on the top right of MediaMonarchy.com. Anything helps keep all of this going. And again, huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, CorbettReport.com, TragedyAndHope.com, and all the other folks who help make this happen. Only one little interesting, creepy customer coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week that caught my eye. Mostly, it's just a lot of residential IP addresses that are visiting the site, so that's great. I generally want to track the interesting corporations and governments and schools and businesses that visit the site. But like always, we had the USAISC headquarters out of Manhattan, Kansas, visiting MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. They were reading that aforementioned story from Vaccine News Daily about U.S. citizens becoming wary of the yummy vaccines our leaders want to poke us with. That's going to do it. Episode 191 for October 22nd, 2010, the year we make contact, my friends. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show at MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.